Welcome to another episode of Search News You Can Use with me, Dr. Marie Haynes. Well, this is an episode that wasn't planned, but a question came up today, and I knew that I just had to record this episode. There's a heading in Search Engine Roundtable today that says, Google, author bylines don't help you rank better. Google doesn't check credentials. Now, this is based on a response from Google's Danny Sullivan in response to The Verge's article, which I'm going to talk about shortly, about SEO. And a lot of people really didn't like this article. I didn't think it was that far off. What I want to share with you today in podcast, and the reason why I jumped off of writing newsletter and right into sharing podcast, is I want to actually apologize that I and a number of other people who really meant well in the industry perpetuated the idea that author bylines were something that Google required. Required is the wrong word. I don't think any of us ever said that Google requires author bylines, but I've shared all sorts of examples of sites that have benefited after adding author bylines. So when I saw this headline by Barry, and Barry knows what he's talking about, Google, author bylines don't help you to rank better. Google doesn't check credentials. It started to make me think. And then I got this question on Twitter, or I guess I should say X, from Rayford Palmer. And I'm going to read out his question here. He says, I get that Google does not check credentials. I'm going backwards here. I'm going to give you the quote in a minute, what he means by checking credentials. But doesn't the hive mind correlate the content out there with your name attached to it, press articles, video, et cetera, and consider that a part of EEAT? For example, it ties a radio station interview with Rayford Dalton Palmer, his name, to the book on Amazon by Rayford Dalton Palmer, to the website articles with the same name, and therefore it's important to tag your stuff with your name so that the crawler can make these connections. Otherwise, how is Google determining the authoritativeness in EEAT? This is a really good question. And Rayford, thank you for tagging me on this because it really made me think. So I'm just going to babble for a bit here because there's a lot that I want to say. And I know that if I take forever to write out a script, I'm never going to get this podcast episode out because I want to get newsletter done. So I started to think about this and I realized, let me go back here and talk about the article itself. So The Verge wrote an article and it is called The Perfect Web Page, How the Internet Reshaped Itself Around Google's Search Algorithms and Into a World Where Websites Look the Same. And it's a really long article. I would recommend that you read it. I think it's quite different than the previous article where we talked about that, caused me to finish my podcast now with See You Later, Alligator. That article, there were good things and bad things about that article. This article is really just stating what I think is truth. It's basically saying that all of the websites on the web kind of look the same because we've all conformed to what it is that Google wants to reward. And over the years, Google has told us what it is that they want to reward. And I have taught on, that's kind of been the basis of my message. Understand what it is that Google wants to reward, and then do all that you can to conform your website to align with that. And that's based on Google's own advice. Google says that below, this is their helpful content advice that I quote all the time. Below are some questions that one could use to assess the quality of a page or an article. And many of these questions talk about things that we would put in an author bio. Is this article written by an expert or enthusiast who knows the topic well, or is it more shallow in nature? Well, it kind of makes sense that an author bio could help somebody know whether you know your topic well, or maybe you're just a content writer who likes to write about this topic. Readers like to know that type of thing. Now, another question, they ask questions about, is Is the site a recognized authority on its topic? In the Quality Rater guidelines, they have a whole section talking about the reputation of content creators. And so as an industry, we created these theories on how Google would do this. And a lot of my theories were based on my understanding of Google's Quality Raters guidelines. The Rater guidelines, we know that they weren't a blueprint for the algorithm. They're teaching Google's Quality Raters to understand what is a good, helpful site, what's good, helpful content that's likely to meet the needs of searchers, and what isn't so good. And so the Quality Raters guidelines have all sorts of sections. They have a section on the reputation of the creator of the content, not just the site itself. And they have all this guidance to the raters on how the reputation of the person who's creating the content could potentially impact your judgment of whether the content was good or helpful or not. And some of the examples that were given would say, for example, they showed a page from a website that didn't have financial EAT. And they said this was an example of a low quality page and said this page had advice on picking a quality stock for investment. And one of the things that they said was there is no evidence that the author has financial expertise. Because this is a YMYL financial article, comma, lacking expertise is a reason for a low rating. And so I took all of that together to say, well, look, if this is something that is a sign of whether a page is demonstrating expertise, then it only makes sense to me that we should have an author bio. And when we asked Google employees about this, they never would say, oh, yes, having an author bio is a direct ranking factor. Nobody ever thought that. But here's a clip from John Mueller. This is from 2019, so not that long ago, where somebody had asked about author bios.
My client is a federal medical center, and all content goes through the doctors first before it is published on the website. I think it's a good idea to let our users and Google know that the information on the website is trustworthy. I understand that I might just add, for instance, some info about the doctor who checked the information and some words like the content was checked before publication by Dr. John Mueller, and also put a link to their personal webpage. But what's the best way to tell Google about this? What should and should I do it at all? So I think, first of all, should I do it at all? I think that's something that you probably have answered already, in that if you're providing information on your web page and it is kind of checked or written, created by someone who has a lot of knowledge on that topic, then that's something I would definitely highlight. So there are lots of ways that you can highlight that on your web pages. You can link to those profiles. You can put text on the pages. Anything to really show users when they come to your pages that there's actually something valuable here, that they can trust this information, that this is something that's reliable, that they can forward on to their friends without having to worry that maybe it's not correct or so. Anything that you can do to make that clear, that probably makes sense for users. That's something you can also check with normal A/B testing. And that probably also makes sense for search engines in that regard as well.
A year earlier, John said something similar, that having author information on your website could help users to trust your website better and could be something that's worthwhile doing. But he specifically mentioned that having an author bio wasn't a direct ranking factor for Google.
Cool. Author bio link, is that really something that Google would consider as a parameter for ranking? Not that I'm aware of. So we used to have a program called Authorship where you could link to your author profile, and we'd be able to kind of show you the information that we know about you. But as far as I know, that hasn't been used for quite some time. So that's essentially something that you can use on your website. Oftentimes, it makes it a little bit easier for users to understand the context of whatever you've written there. If you have a link to an author profile that shows you really know what you're talking about,
you go to conferences to talk about this, you've written about this in various places on the web, then that sometimes gives them a little bit more trust in your content. Or maybe they just want to contact you and give you some tips, or I don't know, ask for a link probably. But all of these things might be reasons why you might have an author profile page that you link from your content.
So Google's message was a little bit confusing. They were saying, yeah, add an author bio. It's good for your users to know more about what your authors know, what their expertise is, why they should trust your author. And their documentation said, you know, the same. People like to see that. And then Google would say, but no, it's not a ranking factor. It's not something that our algorithms look at. So there was a little bit of a disconnect. Now, I'll tell you that I had people come to me all the time. I remember one situation at a conference where somebody who ran a very, very large website that you would all know, said, we did this experiment and we took your advice and we added author bios to just one section of our content. And with the next core update, that section saw a big jump in rankings, just that one section. And we would see this as well with clients. Now, we rarely had clients that would do just one thing, just add author bios. I had one client that had an incredible recovery with the Medic update in August of 2018, where they went out and they hired expert doctors. And yes, they added their author bylines to their posts, and they saw a wild recovery with this Medic core update in August of 2018. And so it was easy to conclude that, look, when you add information about your authors to your website, it can help your rankings. And I still believe that that's the case, and I'm going to explain to you why. And if you read Danny's response to the Verge article, it can be super confusing. And so I'm going to explain why it makes sense now that we know, based on the antitrust trial against Google, just how important user engagement signals are. I'm going to put this whole thing together for you. And so let's keep going here. In the Verge article, they share this hypothetical situation where they've created a website about their lizards. And it's just a hobby website with all this cool information that somebody who actually has lizards would find super interesting. And then they talk about how they need to optimize it in order to rank well. And so they learn about optimizing images. They learn about core web vital scores and all of the things that Google says is good because users like fast, easy to load sites. And eventually what they end up doing is using a template that does all of this quickly for them, makes sure that the website loads properly and is good for users. And what happens over time is as they do the things that conform to the best practices that our SEO industry has developed, very well-meaning over time, as we've shared what works, as we've shared what Google tends to reward, as we've shared our theories on what Google should do, and then we bounce those back and forth and we make this sort of like unofficial guidebook to what you should do in terms of SEO. And so as this happened for this website, it sort of became to look like everybody else's. Now, one of the things they say is we have to prove to Google that we know what we're talking about when it comes to pet lizards. Let's add bylines and author pictures to every post, plus a sentence about why we're qualified to write on the topic. And they go on to say, we're not sure if readers even bother to check our credentials, but we know Google does. Now, here's the problem. They go on to explain why they know that Google checks their credentials. And it's because Google published this blog post recently that talked about how they're going to be further evaluating experience. And as a result, many websites across the web have been putting experience into their headings, into their writing, into the words. I mean, we've talked about this. I've had all sorts of theories on how Google can sort of determine which content is actually demonstrating experience. You know, there's only so much that they can learn with AI. And so we make these estimations of what Google might potentially be doing. But Google did tell us that they want to reward experience clients. And so as a result, they say, well, CNET, on CNET, author bylines have literal subheadings that have expertise and credentials in their author bylines. The New York Times began adding enhanced bylines to some stories that basically are trying to demonstrate experience right in the byline. I've recommended that to clients as well, saying, you know, let's experiment with having different bylines that are demonstrating your experience just for this specific post. Who knows? Perhaps that's something that will help. And so we as an industry have said, look, Google has told us, look, all of this information that it helps to have author bylines on your website, but then they say, oh, it's not a ranking factor. How do you reconcile that? Well, why do you think that these big websites are doing this? They're not doing it just because Google says, hey, we're going to now reward experience. Therefore, we're going to trust everything Google says, and we're going to put more experience into our posts. They're doing it because it's working. Why is it working if Google says that it's not a ranking factor? Well, let's go back to what Danny Sullivan said in response to the part of the Verge article that says, we're not sure if readers even bother to check out our credentials, but we know that Google does. So here I'm going to quote what Danny Sullivan, tweeting as Google search liaison, says, I know this will be a simple, almost quaint answer, but this part of the article is wrong, nor cites us saying this. Google doesn't somehow check our credentials, he put that in quotes. It is something I get that people can misunderstand, but not what I'd expect a news publication researching all this to misunderstand and assert in such a simple, almost quaint screenshot. It is a misconception that, as I shared last November, that we'll do more to address. So let's go to his tweet last November. This was November 16th, and he was talking about author bios. He tweeted a slide from a presentation that he did recently that says, what others have said, definitive recommendations. If you have an author page, you're going to rank better. If you said something was reviewed or reviewed by an expert, you're going to rank better. If you have an about page, you're going to rank better. He says, this is what he says. It doesn't work that way, which leads to some critical thinking to consider when getting advice on ranking well in Google. So by now, you're probably thoroughly confused because Google has said, no, it doesn't help to have author bios. That's not a part of our ranking factors. And then Google has said, yeah, it might help to have author information about your authors on your pages. And so I can understand why people are confused. Let's go back to what Danny said again today as he's talking about the Verge article. He said, and I'm quoting, author bylines aren't something you do for Google, and they don't help you rank better. They're something you do for your readers, and publications doing them may exhibit the type of other characteristics our ranking systems find align with useful content. That's something I've communicated to the Verge's editor-in-chief before, along with anyone who asks about it. It remains still the case. And he quotes, if you're a regular reader of The Verge, you might have noticed some changes to the author bylines in recent months. They're a lot longer with more details, name dropping and quantifying our professional experiences. You can thank Google for that. All of these people are trying to do what I have been teaching for all of these years is, look, Google has told us repeatedly they've said you should be trying to replicate these things that users tend to like. And these things often include having information about your authors on your pages. And so the point that we're missing here is the point that SEOs cannot understand. And that's just how much user preference plays a role in what rankings are. If you have an author bio and you're explaining your credentials, you're speaking to your readers. every little thing that you do that speaks to your readers has the chance of improving your user engagement, of improving your user trust. The more people know who you are, the more they are going to trust you and want to seek you out and want to read your articles. In the case of The Verge, I thought this was interesting. In the case of The Verge, I read that article because it's on The Verge. I don't need to say the news publication that sometimes talks about technology, you recognize it's an authoritative name, The Verge. And so if you have that level of authority where people just know who you are and you're a household name in your industry, then, you can publish things and your readers inherently might trust what you write, or at least have some level of trust. I don't think everybody trusts this Verge article. But I just thought of something interesting. Throughout all of this, I haven't even talked about who the author of the Verge article is. And the reality is I didn't actually know this person, but after reading this article, I went and sought her out. Actually, that's not completely true. I thought, who is this person who wrote this article? Because I think they got a lot of things right on this. And I looked at the end of the article and there was no author bio, which kind of makes sense, I guess, for the article, but I wanted to know who the author was. And in today's day and age, I think it's really important to have an author bio. Why are you listening to this podcast? You have many things that you could listen to, but you listen to it because you want to hear what I have to say on authors, or at least you want to learn more about the topics that I'm talking about. And so it's so important for us to know authentic humans. In the age where AI is going to start writing all sorts of content, AI will be used to do all sorts of things. We're really going to want to seek out personalities, and it adds an authenticity to our content. If I had told you that Verge article was completely AI written, it would not be something that is read by as many people. People want to read things that were written by real people. And so having an author bio at the end of the Verge article would actually have made it more likely for me to seek out the author who wrote this and to follow her on social and to see what else she's written. I thought that it was a well-written article. Now, the next thing is, because this article, they've worked hard to make it so it doesn't really adhere to standard, I don't want to say practices, but what every website on the web looks like, they don't actually put the title or the heading of the article on it until later down on the page. Now, Google's guidance actually talks about having good, clear headings and making the title, making it clear that the title describes what the page is about. And so they have not followed Google's guidelines. And there's a reason for this. I couldn't find who the author was. Eventually, I found her and I couldn't click on her name because they haven't linked to an author bio. I think it's kind of like a rebellious move by The Verge that they are just giving Google a slap in the face. The thing is, though, that it actually was not good for me. Now, because I'm recording this podcast, and actually, coincidentally, the author liked one of my tweets just as I was about to record this episode, so I knew where she was on Twitter, and I followed her. And now, we have some sort of a connection, and that will improve her EEAT, because EEAT is Google gathering signals from wherever they can and using those in machine learning systems that try to approximate, try to understand what the real world is, what really exists in the real world, who's legitimate in the real world, who knows what they're talking about when they talk about algorithms. When they talk about certain topics, this is what Google systems are trying to do. So here's where the podcast gets really interesting. When we start to consider what we recently learned from Google's antitrust trial, the Department of Justice is suing Google, and I don't understand all the details of the lawsuit, but it is about monopolization as far as I understand. But we learned a lot from the exhibits, and the exhibits are published. Anybody can look at them. There is a testimony from Pandu Nayak from Google, who talks completely about how the algorithm works. works. And I wrote about it in my paid newsletter. I've been writing about it in multiple places. My book is coming out soon that's going to talk about this in great detail. It's very hard for the SEO brain to understand the way that search has changed over the last few years. But I think in studying this for so long, I've gotten to the point where I can explain it, and it's actually incredibly simple. So let me give it a shot here. We know how Google search results have worked traditionally with an index. And I'm not going to try to explain how ranking has traditionally worked, but so much of what we do is based on this knowledge that a number of engineers sat down, wrote a bunch of code with a bunch of heuristics or rules that basically define what is a high quality page, and then they present those to searchers. And we've known for many years that PageRank was one of the fundamental parts. It was one of the most important signals that determined whether content was actually likely to be helpful or not. And PageRank for many years really was the most important signal that Google had in their systems. And SEOs exploited that, and we still do today. PageRank is still a signal in Google systems, but they've gotten much, much better at determining when and where to count that signal and where its value is. And that's what machine learning systems do, is they take all of the signals that are available to them, and then they figure out how to weigh those signals, how much preference to give to each of them, depending on the query and depending on what type of outcome they want. And so over the many years, Google has been getting better and better and better at putting these systems together so that they are good at ranking results. So let's talk about what we learned in these DOJ trials, trial exhibits. The testimony from Pandu Nayak talked about RankBrain. What an amazing name, RankBrain. We've heard of RankBrain since 2015, and we didn't really kind of understand what Google was talking about. They told us about concepts, and they said that RankBrain was really good at understanding that if somebody searched for "why does my TV look fuzzy," the concept that they were trying to get was something called the soap opera effect. There's a name to it. But even though the query didn't have that concept, RankBrain understood that. And RankBrain is Google's brain for ranking sites. Now, let's think of ChatGPT. ChatGPT is like a system that uses a language model amongst a whole bunch of other programming to produce the chatbot that you have now. RankBrain is Google's system that uses not just language models, it uses all sorts of other systems and components to best figure out what to rank for people, what to put in front of people that's likely to be, their mission is to put things in front of people that are helpful and reliable. So RankBrain does that. And I'm not going to explain the whole system of ranking because I think it will take too long, and I want to make this shorter because I have a newsletter to write, goodness. But it comes down to this. They say that Google search results are narrowed down to 20 to 30 results. Those 20 to 30 results are then re-ranked by RankBrain. Now, RankBrain makes use of all of Google's systems, the helpful content system, the freshness system. There's many, many systems now that Google has that they didn't have years ago. PageRank is one of those, one of the signals in the whole system that RankBrain uses that tries to determine what it is that users like. But here's the thing that's most important to RankBrain. It's trained on user data. Throughout the whole trial, they talk about how RankBrain is trained on user data. And I've been writing my theories on how that's done. Maybe these theories aren't dangerous because I think my theories on how Google would put information into the knowledge graph and how you want connections I would say, well, look, if I'm writing on SEO and I get published in search engine land, that strengthens the connections in the knowledge graph. Well, actually, like, I still think that that's true. but for different reasons. I think that every signal that you put into the world speaks to your authority on a topic. It speaks to how well you're known for a topic. And so we've limited it to just the things that we could communicate on our website. But I think that it's so much more. I want to share with you more about the DOJ trials. And I think that we need to be talking about this a lot. And I think that there's nobody who really thoroughly understands this. And so I'm going to give you my best explanation again. There's one exhibit that talks about, it's a slide that's called The Life of a Click. And it labels interactions, reads, clicks, scrolls, mouse hovers, and then it says dot, dot, dot. And it tells us that those interactions are fed back into search. And that's what is the power of Rank Brain. Now, those interactions, they refer to them throughout the trial as IS. And a little bit of research in other places tells me that that probably means information satisfaction. And so these are all signals that a user has been satisfied. So let me read some of the testimony. Let's see here. Google uses what are called core algorithms to bring that down. So they're talking about how ranking works. And they say to bring that down to a set of 200 documents, right? And Pandu Nayak says several hundred. Yes. Several hundred. And I'm just going to write core algorithm because I'm probably going to use that. And those algorithms give the documents initial ranking scores, right? And Nayak says, yes. And an application of BERT, when BERT is used for ranking, is DeepRank, right? Yes. And DeepRank is trained on user data. Yes, it is. And then they start talking about Rank Brain. He says, Rank Brain looks at the top 20 or 30 documents and may adjust their initial score. Is that right? Nayak says, yes, or says, that is correct. Then the question is, Rank Brain is trained on queries across all languages and locales Google operates in. I think so, yes. Question, and then it's fine-tuned on IS data. Answer, that is correct. But it is not possible to train Rank Brain only on human radar data, right? No, you can't. And each time Rank Brain is retrained, it is with fresh data, right? It's with, yes, new data, yeah. And for years, RankBrain was trained on 13 months worth of click and query data. Is that right? And Nayak says, I think initially it started with the same amount as NavBoost. Now, we can talk about NavBoost and Glue. My understanding is that the whole system of NavBoost kind of figures out what to pull in, and Glue helps with this as well. Whether a search result is going to contain a map or people also ask or a top stories carousel, all those decisions are made based on what's likely to be more helpful for the user. And then when part of that, what's likely to be more helpful is actually organic results, it's this whole Rank Brain system that figures out what's most likely to be helpful for searchers. And all of that is trained on information satisfaction signals. And I've written a bunch of theories on, you know, how those are fed into machine learning systems, but really it doesn't matter. So I told you it was simple and then I made it super complicated. And so I'm going to try to finish this with something very simple. The reason why author bios can sometimes help sites to rank better is that it can help users to understand and to trust your site. And the more users understand and trust your site, the more you are likely to send signals of user satisfaction. Now, those signals, it's not like Google says, oh, wow, tons of people started submitting forms and reading the content on this person's website, therefore they must rank better. No, those, I believe, are sent back as signals that, hey, that was a good search. Whatever we did there, that was good. And that's given as an example of helpful content to the system that's trying to learn what helpful content is. And over time, the system learns that what it is that people tend to like to click on, I think it's related to the query as well. You know, the system learns which type of content actually is satisfying the searcher's needs. And then the trial goes on to talk about how the raters are needed to sort of ground the system. Otherwise, if we rely just on user preference, it's really easy for that to be manipulated. So I think that's enough for this episode. I just had to get it out that on one hand, I want to apologize that I think some of the industry created these rules about author bios based on my advice. On the other hand, I think that my advice was right. It was just the reasoning behind it perhaps was not the reasoning on how Google rewarded content that had author bios. Do you need an author bio? A lot of pages don't. You don't need an author bio if you have like a product page. You're like, who wrote this page about backpacks? They must really know their stuff. Google knows if you sell backpacks, whether you're known for your backpacks, whether you have a good reputation for it, whether people actually buy from you. And so they know the types of sites that they're going to put in front of people. And it doesn't really matter whether you have an author bio there. But let's say you're Rayford and you're writing an article about divorce. If I'm reading that article, I hope I'm never reading that article. If I'm reading that article, then that's wrong. I think Rayford's got some really good information on doing good things for couples. And I saw him tweeting about having a date night more often, which is an excellent idea. So if I'm reading that article, I want to know that this person knows what he's talking about. As a reader, I want to know it's not just some AI thing that was plastered together based on what's likely to rank in Google results. I want to know. I know from following Rayford on Twitter that he's talked about connecting with mental health professionals and helping couples who are having problems with relationships and putting them together. Like, it sounds like he's a good, authentic human being, and that's what people like. And so that's what the algorithm is built to replicate. Now, I'm going to just say one more thing. I said I would finish. I'm going to talk about spam. Google says that changes are coming to fight spam. You probably, as you're reading this or reading, as you're listening to this, you're thinking, well, this is all nice and everything, but I'm seeing spam in my search results. And Google is not ranking the type of content that they say is supposed to be helpful content. Danny Sullivan said that there are changes coming soon to fight spam. And I know Google's been saying that a long time. I thoroughly believe that Gemini has given Google increased capabilities to understand the patterns that are connected with spam. And I think that Google had to let spam run rampant, let the AI-generated spam run rampant for a period of time so the machine learning systems can learn. I am predicting that we're going to see more helpful content updates, which is why I have spent the last year plus trying to put together all of the information I can on doing what it is that Google rewards, which turns out I had to rewrite it all because I had the revelation that the thing that you need to do is to not think of Google. Well, not completely. You still need a fast site. You still need to follow best practices, but you need to first be thinking of your audience. And if you put your audience first and you develop an audience and you become known for your topics and create helpful content on those topics, that's the key to ranking, especially as everything changes as we see SGE and Bard come soon. I hope you've enjoyed that. I'm going to say I wish you the best of luck with your rankings, but I think I'm going to stick with it. See you later, alligator.